a Moabitess, standing in the middle of my field during the first good barley harvest in a decade. Well, she isn't exactly standing, she's gleaning in the heat of the day, but it's a Moabitess, gleaning in the middle of my field in the heat of the day during the first good barley harvest in a decade. Well, to be honest, it's not actually my field. It belongs to my master, Boaz. I'm his foreman, and he has entrusted me with the bringing in of this harvest. And what a harvest is this going to be? It's the best barley harvest we've seen in a decade. And I have a Moabitess gleaning in the middle of Boaz's field during the first good barley harvest in a decade. What would he say? What will he do? You don't know him, my master? Boaz, that's strange. Everybody seems to know Boaz. You see, he's a worthy man. The most worthy man, perhaps, in the entire village of Bethlehem. Oh, you recognize the name of my town. That seems very strange. Nothing important or significant has ever happened in Bethlehem. In fact, we've been a joke for the last decade. You see, the name Bethlehem means house of bread. And there had been no bread in our houses for the last decade. But my master Boaz, he's a worthy man. During this time of famine, there have been some who have held back their tithes and offerings, but not my master. Oh no, he's a worthy man. There have been some who have stolen from others to feed themselves, but not my master. He's a worthy man. There are some who have even moved the boundary markers in the night to make their fields larger in hopes of a bigger harvest, but not my master. My master is a worthy man. There are even some who have broken faith with the Lord God, fled far from the nation of Israel into the land of Moab where there is much food. Not my master. My master is a worthy man. You may have heard the saying, God helps those who help themselves. Well, you didn't hear it from Boaz. Through thick and thin, high and low, lean and plenty, he continues to say to us, God will be faithful to his covenant. Let us be faithful to God and obey his commandments. He's a worthy man. And here God has been faithful to us and brought down this great harvest. And here I have this foreign woman, this Moabitess, this immigrant standing in the middle of Boaz's field. What will he say? Oh, we'll find out soon. He's coming down. Oh, yes, and the Lord also be with you, sir. You were right. It is a plentiful harvest. The Lord didn't forget us and let us starve. But, sir, if you notice, yes, sir, the workers have had plenty of water and more rest than they deserve, honestly, sir. But, sir, yes, lunch is ready. You really think it's a good time to stop already? They just had a rest, sir. Yes. Yes, in a moment, then, sir. But, sir, yes. Yes, sir, that's what I've been trying to tell you. That's that Moabitess, you know, the foreigner, the one that came back with Naomi from Moab. I mean, did she attract it? Did you like that foreign American sort of thing? Yeah, sir, she's been out here all day, and she's gleaning so fast, we might as well give her a sickle and let her harvest with the rest of the men. She's just not doing it right. And, sir, I really think that we ought to tell her that she should just go on over there and harvest in a Elimelech's field. Well, yes, sir, I know Elimelech's field is full of nothing but weeds. That's the point. If Elimelech hadn't left, his field wouldn't be fallow, he wouldn't be dead, and his wife wouldn't have returned here with nothing. Well, actually, with less than nothing, because she brought that with her. And now that's leaning in our fields, right? I'm not comfortable having this foreigner here. Well, I did forget your mother was a foreigner. I'm very sorry, sir. Yes, I will try to watch my tongue. You'd like her to come to have lunch with us? Yes, I will ask her for lunch. Oh, more, sir? Yes? Really? I'll tell the men. All right, man, listen up. The boss has three things he wants you to remember about the Moabite girl. Keep your hands to yourself, keep your comments to yourself,
And he wants you to pull out extra barley and throw it on the ground so she's got lots of it. I don't know what that old hen thinks she's playing at, but she nearly ruined the reputation of an honorable, worthy man, not to mention the reputation of that hard-working Moabite girl that she brought back with. You know, you'd think that barley was free, the way Boaz has been giving it away over the last 3 weeks. Every day, this Moabite girl shows up to feed, and every night he fills a sack full of barley so heavy she can barely walk. I think he enjoys watching her stagger home with a little bit more of his harvest than her shoulder. Nobody can deny the change that has come over our master over these last 3 weeks. Why, he seems 10 years younger every time that girl shows up. And she just can't hide the wide-eyed admiration she has for this man who just puts more and more barley in her sack and sends her home to her mother-in-law, Naomi. But none of that excuses what happened here last night, and I know that old cow Naomi's behind. You know what happens at the end of a barley harvest, right? We have a threshing party, and that's when all of the men of the community, and I emphasize men, get together and thresh out the barley. Oh, it's hard and heavy work, and given the amount this year, we went all day and right down into the light working by candlelight. We were exhausted and weary and joyous, great mounds of barley everywhere, and we settled down around our fires to enjoy stories and roasted grains. Wine flowed, stories told, laughter. And then the embers of the fires went out around midnight, and everybody drifted off to sleep. And that's when I smelled the sweet, spicy, wicked smell of perfume. There's a lot of things that you should smell at a barley threshing floor. Perfume is not one. There's the earthy smell of fresh, fresh grain and the sneezy smell of the chaff being blown away. There's a rich smell of roasted meat and campfires. The smell of tired, weary men. Perfume. Perfume has no place in the threshing floor of a worthy man. While there's some other houses in Israel that may make that common, but not at the house of my master. You know how dark it is in the hills of Bethlehem once the sun has gone down? You can't see anything. It's not a smart thing to be skulking around wearing perfume on the floor of a threshing floor. This is no tradition in Israel. Heard my master give a little start, a little cry of surprise when somebody pulled aside his blanket and lay down at his feet. And he said, "Who's there?" And the answer came with a distinctly Moabite accent, a tremble in the voice. What was the tremble? Was it expectation or hope or sheer utter fear? These are the days of the judges. You're not safe in broad daylight, let alone in the middle of the night. Had this been any other than a worthy man? And I heard a voice. It was a woman's voice. And she said, "Put your wing over me." Smart girl. For those were the words that Boaz had said to her the day that they met. "May the Lord put his wing over you." So she had said to him, "Would you do for me what you asked the Lord to do for me?" I couldn't hear the rest of the conversation. It was a little too muffled, and I was tired and fell asleep. But when I woke up in the morning, she was gone. And I noticed that one of our piles of barley had been reduced by 6 walking measures of barley. She must have staggered home. Well, there you are. You missed it. You should have been there right at the city gates. First thing in the morning, Boaz is going around and he's calling together all of the elders of the town. He's got 10 elders together, which means he intended to conduct some sort of legal transaction. Not only that, he got his cousin Amasa to come over. You don't know Amasa. You don't want to know Amasa.
Amasa is no worthy man. All we ever hear from Amasa is how his fields are in the worst part of town, on the rocky soil, wrong side of the hill, too much wind, not enough rain. So he just about jumped out of his sandals at the suggestion that he could procure for himself Elimelech's property as his own. You see, in the land of Israel, we have an ancient law based on the law of Jubilee. And that means that land never transfers ownership forever. When I sell a piece of land, there's a timer that is set, and when we come to the year of Jubilee, every 50 years, all land reverts to its original owner. It's part of God's plan to ensure that nobody is impoverished for any great deal of time, even if they've had a terrible series of bad harvests. And so you more or less lease the land based on how many years there are until the next Jubilee. They calculate the price, and the deal is made. But when Amasa heard that Elimelech's fields were available, he suddenly realized this is an unencumbered deal. Elimelech is dead, Mahlon and Chilion, his two sons, are dead. There's nobody for it to revert to. The purchase of this field would be a one-time purchase, and forever it would belong to him. Oh, you can see the wheels in his tiny little brain working themselves around. How much would he have to sell in order to get him the money he'd need to buy this field and double his inheritance? For a moment, Amasa was greedy with avarice, grinning ear to ear. He said, "I'll do it. I'll do it." Boaz said, "Yes, but there is a condition. With Elimelech's land, you get Ruth, the Moabites." You see, there's another law that you may not be aware of. In Israel, it's the law of the kinsman redeemer, and it's another law that's put in place to ensure that people are not left destitute and in poverty. The way the law works is this, that if a widow dies without children, it is the responsibility of her nearest neighbor to make her his wife and to raise up children for her, and the firstborn child of that woman is not second husband's heir, but heir of the first. Suddenly, Amasa realized his calculations were all wrong. This wasn't a great deal. This was a terrible deal. The worst deal he could imagine. All of that money, all of that time, turning the soil, planting the seed, bringing out the harvest, threshing out the grain, and for what? To marry Ruth, the Moabitess, this foreign immigrant, and give her child the inheritance of Elimelech? He stammered, he stuttered, he looked at Boaz and said, "I can't do this. I won't do this. Who would do this? This is insane." Then he turned to Boaz and said, "You do it." The grin that spread across the face of Boaz was like the sun coming out from behind a cloud. Elimelech took off his sandal and handed it to Boaz, a sign in our nation that he had decided to neglect all of his obligations and give them instead to Boaz. And people ask, what would Boaz get? What can he possibly gain? But by redeeming Elimelech's land at enormous price, only to give it back to the firstborn son of Ruth? What does he gain? Boaz didn't gain the land, or the property, or the money, or the title, or the deed. He got Ruth. And so it is that Boaz redeemed Elimelech's land and married the Moabitess, Ruth. And he turned the sod, and he planted the crop, and he brought forth the harvest. But by the second season, when the harvest was coming forth, the harvest wasn't Boaz's anymore. For Ruth had had a son, an heir to Elimelech. And they named that little baby Obed. And Obed grew up on the land that Boaz had redeemed by love. And he raised up his family, a son by the name of Jesse. And Jesse grew up on that plot of love redeemed by Boaz and his bride, Ruth the Moabitess. And he had eight sons, Jesse, the youngest one, a handsome, ruddy shepherd boy, good with a sling, good with a poem, who later became David, king of Israel. And
And our little town of Bethlehem became known as the city of David. And so it is that a story that begins with famine ends with harvest. Begins with the funeral of a family and ends with a family tree. It begins with emptiness and ends with fullness. And it ends not with Obed or Jesse or with David. But I think you know how this story ends, because it ends with David's greater son, the true kinsman redeemer. And of him we sometimes say, O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. Beneath the still and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. Yet in the bright sky shineth the everlasting light, the hopes and dreams.